Okay, so to segue, as we've been doing, from one topic to the next, so yesterday we spoke about the role of Besdin, and we mentioned that tied in with the issue of Besdin is their responsibility that the Ger is a appropriate candidate, is somebody who is going to take on the obligation of mitzvos. And if they're not careful about that, that could possibly impact on their own status. So to kind of segue from one topic to the next within that, so this major question which has come up tangentially a number of times so far, so now to just look at it head on, the question of Kabbalas HaMitzvos as Geirus. And that's a particularly phrase to say as Geirus, because on the one hand, it's not listed among the three requirements of Geirus that the Gemara originally tells us about. And that creates some question as to where exactly it fits in. Alternatively, there are those who would explain that it's not listed as a requirement because it is Geirus. That's what Geirus means. And therefore, to enter into the covenant of mitzvos is the definition of Geirus, and we can't separate it out as any kind of a individual obligation. So it's one of those things which seems like it could flip in either direction, that either it's not part of the requirements, or it's so basic to the process that it doesn't even need to be identified as a requirement because it is the whole process. Rav Soloveitchik in his shiurim, so he understood that the obligation of accepting the mitzvos is part and parcel of what Geirus means. And if we go back to Har Sinai, so there, that was at the time of the giving of the Torah, where all the mitzvos are being transmitted. That's essentially the essence of entering into Klal Yisrael, and specifically, as is brought in Har Kedem, understanding it as a package, as one entity of the mitzvos as a totality. So that's the way the Gemara certainly seems to understand it. The Gemara, which appears to some extent in our home base, in the section in Yevamos, which has most of the rules of Geirus that we've been working from. So there we saw that part of the process is we try to ascertain at the beginning that he's somebody who's going to fulfill mitzvos. We tell him about the mitzvos. We tell him how the mitzvos carry with it liability, and maybe he's better off without that liability. At the time of the tevila, we tell him again about the mitzvos, and all of that appears in the Gemara in Yevamos. The Gemara in Bechoris on Daf Lamed says it more strongly that if a ger refuses to accept even one detail of the Torah, so then he's not going to be considered a valid ger. So he has to accept everything, and if he says, I'm interested in 612 mitzvos, so then we're not able to accept such a conversion. If he excludes even the smallest part, that's not acceptable. So that seems like a pretty sweeping statement. And the question comes up, so where exactly does that stand as far as a requirement? Is that absolute, or is that l'chachila? Is that a din in the Kabbalah, like we saw day one, that there is probably a big distinction, at least for some things, between the standard for accepting in the first place and the standard of what is kosher after the fact. So how does that play in here? Right, just to refresh our memories, for example, when we talked about Geirus for the sake of marriage, so we saw that there were two sets of concerns, but they're very different from each other. One is that the motivation is not pure, and that's a concern, but that's really more of a l'chatchila concern. But the second concern, that it means that there isn't going to be an actual acceptance of the practices of halachic Judaism, that's a much more serious consideration because, as we'll discuss now, that may be even a b'dieved issue. So there are concerns on different levels. So we need to clarify that point. Is that indeed a b'dieved issue, or is that like the motivation issue, which is something that we need to look into l'chachila, but it doesn't necessarily create a psul if it's not done or if it's not done to a satisfactory extent. So that's a big discussion. So yesterday, if you recall, so Tyler called our attention to the Rambam. And let's look at the Rambam's language again. There's a number of Rambams that are significant here. But the Rambam that we were discussing yesterday, let me just get it open again. So this was in Hilchos Yisuri Bia. I'm in the wrong parak. A second. Sorry.
Are we talking about Yud Gimel Yud Zayin?
Yes, I have a connection for some reason is a little slow today, so your voice isn't coming through 100%. Sorry, having a little technical challenges here. But the language of the Rambam and Perek Yudalit of Hilchos Yisuri Bia, which we talked about yesterday, the language was Ger shel abadku acharav, o shelohu diyuhu hamitzos, v'mal v'tabal b'fnei gimel hejiotos, harei zeger, afilu nodo shevishvil davar humiskayer, ho v'mal v'tabal yotva michal akum v'choshen lo ad sheyispire tzidkuso. So it sounds like from the language of that Rambam that b'dieved is acceptable without kabbalas hamitzvos, that if we didn't go through that whole process and we accepted him, so that harais eger. So it's a big discussion what exactly to do with that language of the Rambam. And Rish Sternbach in his Shuvas in Chelek Aleph in Taf Reish Yud, Sternbach has a tshuva where he focuses on the inclusion of hedyotos there. And he suggests that it goes to the protocols of Beis Din, that if you have a Beis Din that knows what's going on and knows that he's not ready to accept mitzvos, so then that creates an invalidation in the Beis Din itself. And therefore, the process is going to be disqualified for that reason. That's the way he understands it. We discussed yesterday various questions about how the Beis Din is impacted by the nature of the gerim that it's considering or accepting. So he works with that premise that if a Beis Din knows that the individual is not really going to take on the mitzvos, so then that affects the composition of the Beis Din itself. But let's say you had a group of hejotos. You had people who just weren't sophisticated enough to know that that's what's going on. But they assumed that there would be performance of mitzvos from this individual. And they didn't understand that they had to be more on top of it. So for that reason, it's acceptable. So essentially, he's medayik in that language to say that, no, you certainly need acceptance of mitzvos. But the acceptance of mitzvos is assessed by the Beis Din. So if the Beis Din believes that that's what's going on, so then it's a valid gerus. If the Beis Din knows it's not what's going on, so it's not a valid gerus, and that's why you have this focus on hejotos in his language. So this whole question of whether it's l'chachil or b'dieved was a major discussion in Poskim. And the poskim who consider this, among the well-known ones are the Dvar Avram that we've mentioned a few times, just to refresh our memories on that, that the Dvar Avram, when talking about marriage, so he referenced the idea that the ger for marriage is acceptable because, as the Ritva and other Rishonim say, we know that once he's part of the Jewish community, he'll be observant. So the Dvar Avraham said that was then. But nowadays, we no longer have that necessity. So that's no longer the assumption. And others, the Beis Yitzchak and the Achiezer, others who considered this question, the attitude of most poskim who considered this was that it is ma'akev b'di'evit. What this Gemara in Bechorus means is that this has to be accepted, and if the mitzvahs aren't accepted, so then the geirus is flawed. The geirus is deficient and is not effective. Now, what's fascinating, and this has a lot of relevance to contemporary conversion situations, is that the Gemara, here this is the Gemara in Shabbos, as mentioned before, the Gemara in Shabbos at Daf Samaches in the days. So there, the Gemara is talking about different situations of shogeg. A person could violate Shabbos because of a lack of knowledge, or he thinks that it's permissible, he thinks that there's no such thing as Shabbos. So the Gemara gets into the discussion of how could it be that you could have somebody who doesn't know about Shabbos as a concept. So the Gemara mentions that he was, among a couple of possibilities, somebody who's Niskaira Ben Ha'akum, somebody who converted among the non-Jews, meaning that he lives in a society where he doesn't see Shabbos observed. So he doesn't think that it's really a thing. So he could be unaware of it as a concept. So what's fascinating there is that apparently it's possible to convert and to not know about Shabbos, right? To not know that Shabbos is an issue. And Rashi actually spells out a little bit later in the Gemara and Daf Ayin Beis that maybe he doesn't even know about Avodah Zarah. Maybe he converted and he doesn't realize that he's not allowed to be an idolater. So these are pretty big details. And yet, it sounds like there could be a valid conversion under those circumstances. So here you should take a look at the Rishonim. Again, my apologies for not putting it on the list, but if you take a look, first of all, what does it mean, Niskaira ben Ha'akum? How did he convert among non-Jews? So what about yesterday we spoke about the Beis Din requirements, so was he going to a non-Jewish Beis Din? That seems pretty problematic. So what are we talking about? So the Tosus there points out that he went to the actual conversion he did in front of a Beis Din, but they neglected to tell him about Shabbos. And then right afterwards, he moved into this community where there weren't any Jewish people, and he never saw Shabbos being observed. So it happened to be that he wasn't aware that it was an issue, and the Beis Din, which that was of course necessary, but they didn't tell him about this. The Ramban goes a little further, the Ramban over there also on Shabbos, and says that maybe they didn't tell him about mitzvahs at all. They didn't know that there was a mitzvah, so there's a thing. So does that suggest that apparently you don't need to have Kabbalah HaMitzvos LeYikuva? That here you could have this possibility of Niskaira Ben Ha'akum, you could have somebody who converted without the Kabbalah HaMitzvos. So here there are many who distinguish. Most prominently is quoted the Chemda Shlomo in his Shuvas in Yeridei and Tzimin Chavtes, quoted by many later Achronim, who draw a distinction between Kabbalah HaMitzvos and Hodas HaMitzvos, that the mitzvos have to be accepted, but the individual may not know all the mitzvos, and therefore we're supposed to tell him about them. But failing to do that, failing to inform him of the mitzvos, that is not ma'akev. And that seems to be the pshat in the sugya in Shabbos over there, and the Ritva over there essentially explains it like that as well. It's a failure on the part of the Beis Din, but it's not a disqualifying failure. And the Chemda Shlomo and others suggest that that's pshat on the Rambam, and it's really the Shulchan Aruch also, because otherwise you have stiras in the Rambam and in the Shulchan Aruch, that the Rambam in a number of places does emphasize the crucial aspect of Kabbalah HaMitzvos, as does the Shulchan Aruch, But at the same time, the Rambam says, and the Shulchan Aruch also echoes this point that we said before, that if we didn't go through the mitzvot with him and he converts anyway, so he's still considered to be converted. So the distinction must be along those lines, that the Kabbalah HaMitzvos is Ma'akeh, but the Hodas HaMitzvos, the responsibility to go through it with him beforehand, so that's what you're supposed to do, but failing to do that is not Ma'akeh, and that could be the resolution of the contradictions in the Rambam and in the Shulchan Aruch, and also essentially the thrust of that Sugya in Shabbos. Tyler?
Sorry, so are we saying that whatever mitzvot based in neglect to share with the convert, then that ger is not high in those mitzvot because he doesn't know about them until he knows about them?
Not at all. I mean, yes, you know, with somebody who doesn't know about something, so it's hard to consider him responsible for what he doesn't know. But chayiv, he's chayiv in all mitzvot. The question is, could it be that the standard for conversion requires him to accept the mitzvot? So how can we square that with the idea that he's not practicing certain mitzvot? So if he was never informed of them, so he's willing to accept the obligations of halachic Judaism, he just wasn't aware that that includes X, Y, and Z, so then that doesn't disqualify the gerus. But to say he's not chayiv would be an overstatement. He's not obligated in all the mitzvot of the Torah. He's not chayiv in the literal sense of liable, you know, because those sugyas are talking about shogeg and mezid, so chayiv is not chayiv onesh. But in the question of his liability, that's one thing, but he's responsible, you know, he's supposed to be observing all the mitzvot. But what that Gemara in Shabbos also points to is that the way, and this has major ramifications for contemporary geiros in the complex community of modern America, that if something is a halachic requirement, but the way society, the way Jewish society presents it, it's not something that actually people do, so then it's understandable if a ger believes that it's not really a part of Judaism. That even if the sources will all say this is something you're obligated to do, but he looks around and nobody else does it, or in their community that's just not practiced, so their perception doesn't disqualify their Kabbalah HaMitzvot. So that's, for example, very often relevant in the context of Sneas, for example. So we know that there are halachic requirements that are often very much at odds with the way Jews are behaving in some contexts. So for a ger to think that, okay, so it's legitimate, it's possible to be a Jew in this kind of a context, so that's an understandable mistake. It's not correct. It's still a mistake. But it's not a mistake that means he wasn't Mekabel Mitzvot. That's what he thought being a practicing Jew, that's what he thought of being a practical Jew means. Or it could even impact, like we see from the origins of the Sugya, something as big as Shabbos. So Rav Moshe Feinstein has a number of tshuvas about this whole issue, where Rav Moshe has many tshuvas about this, and he emphasizes that he certainly believes that Kabbalah HaMitzvot is Ma'akev, but what exactly constitutes the Kabbalah HaMitzvot is sometimes hard to assess. And so, for example, if somebody got converted for marriage, wanted to get married, so she converted, and her husband's not a Shomer Shabbos, so she doesn't plan on being Shomer Shabbos. So she may have the impression, because of her involvement with her husband and his circles, that being Shomer Shabbos is not really a requirement. It's nice. There are some very pious people who do it. You know, they're crazy, crazy righteous people, but it's not something that's actually required. So as much as that is at complete odds with what our religion actually believes, but that's her honest impression of it, so that may indeed be a valid geiros. That's something that Rav Moshe considers. And the assessment here, as we've seen with some of the other topics that have been relevant here, is somewhat subjective. It's a little bit of a hard call to know, are they actually rejecting the Torah itself, or are they accepting the Torah, but they have a impacted assessment of what the Torah actually asks for. So this sugya of Niskaira ben Ha'akum is very significant in reflecting this idea that it's possible for somebody to convert to Judaism and not know about Shabbos and not know about Avodah Zarah and yet still be a valid ger because they think that they are leading a Jewish life. So there's a lot to assess as far as that's concerned. And just also a point that we have mentioned in the past, but just to recap it here, one of the points that Rav Moshe talks about is that, let's say if somebody verbally says he accepts all the mitzvot, but the practice is different. So, strictly speaking, we usually go based on what a person says. We say, dvarim shebelev einam dvarim. So if a person made a verbal declaration, that should be what defines us. And that's generally the case. The question is, when does it become overwhelmingly clear that it was never true? So if somebody very obviously never plans on leading a religious life, so does that ever rise to the level of an Anan Sadi, as something that we can testify as a Tzibor? We know it's clearly true that there's no acceptance here, in which case that would overpower his verbal statement, and we wouldn't call that simply Dvarim Shebelev. So that's part of this assessment, and it's sometimes a somewhat subtle and nuanced assessment, which is aside from the fact that we mentioned also earlier that there are some who say in the case of Kabbalah Samitzvos Dvarim Shebelev do define it, because the whole idea of a Kabbalah is a Dvar Shebelev, and it's different than a monetary transaction between people. Or maybe we wouldn't focus so much on Dvarim Shebelev. So this is a part of the discussion. Another major part of the issue is, and this is a distinction that's drawn by Reb Chaim Ozer in the Tshuva Sachiezer in Chelek Gimel, where he talks about this. So Reb Chaim Ozer, together with all these other poskim, takes the strong stance that you have to have a Kabbalah Samitzvah for the Geirus to be valid. But he draws a distinction between somebody who says, I'm going to convert, but I don't want this mitzvah to apply to me, or I don't believe in this part of Judaism, so convert me exception of this. So that is no good. That's what the Gemara in Bukhara says, that 612 mitzvahs we don't take you. But what if he says, I accept that there are all 613 mitzvahs, I accept the totality of the Torah, but I also have a great desire to eat pork, or I have a great desire to do whatever it is. Or, for example, as may very well be practical, I have a great desire to marry a Kohen, a woman might say. So maybe we should say that it's still acceptable if a person accepts the mitzvot, but also says that they are too weak, so to speak, to be able to live up to their expectations. So Reb Chaim Ozer drew this distinction. A lot of other later poskim had trouble with it. So, for example, Dvar Avram argues on it. More recently, Reb Nachman Gestetner and the Laharis Nachman has a few chuvas where he argues on it. Reb Moshe Sternbuch argues on it. And the argument takes different forms. They say, for example, what does it mean to be makabel a mitzvah and say you're not going to do it? The mitzvah, by definition, is a practical action. So if you're not planning on performing the practical action, so then what does it mean to be makabel a mitzvah? They argue that that's even a category. Or as Sternbuch puts it with a slightly different emphasis, is the point of Kabbalah Samitzvos is to be brought into Jewish practicing society. And if you're not going to be practicing, so then, once again, so what does that mean? Now, clearly, we have to draw some distinctions, as Reb Chaim Ozer himself anticipates, and he draws distinctions, and with him or without him, you're going to have to draw these distinctions. Because, Ein Tzadik V'aretz Asher Yaseh Tov V'lo Yaseh, right? There's nobody who's going to be perfect with everything. So, if we're saying that Kabbalah Samitzvos requires not only the commitment to all of the binding authority of the mitzvos, but to live up to the demands of every mitzvah. So then it's impossible. You can never have a care. No one's able to be flawless. And if you're going to rule out even averus l'teyavo, and even people who are going to transgress because of a strong desire that's not rebellious, so then how could anyone ever be a care? So you have to make some distinctions, and that Chaim Ozer is making within his shita, but even those who disagree with Chaim Ozer are going to have to make distinctions also. And you're going to have to say along the lines that there are some mitzvos that define Judaism culturally, and those are crucial both in acceptance and in performance. And there are other mitzvos which are not part of the cultural definition as much, and are more subject to a te'avon lahachis kind of distinction. And there, they have to be accepted, at least in authority, but in practice, we can acknowledge that people will stumble. So once again, there is a lot of subjectivity there. There is, presumably things like Shabbos and keeping kosher, those are the big cultural mitzvos, which it's impossible to say that they're not a part of what it means to be practically Jewish, but with other things, then maybe we'll make a distinction. So that's important. And once again, somewhat subtle issue, and it may also differ from society to society. It might be that in one community, what it means to be Jewish includes certain mitzvot, that in other societies might not be. The only thing we know that in all societies is that one can speak Lashon Hara and still be Jewish. That's the Gemara says, that Kulan Avak Lashon Hara, so all of us are guilty at least of Avak Lashon Hara. And we know that we're observing the 9 days right now because we're still in Galus because of Sinas Chinam. And Chafetz Chaim explains in his Sefer that Sinas Chinam is the same thing as Lashon Hara. So apparently Lashon Hara does not exclude you from the cultural definition of being Jewish in any Jewish community, but that's certainly an aver. So that's certainly an area where we have to be makabel, that is not only a part of the Torah, but it's the one that's keeping us in exile right now. But at the same time, unfortunately, it's possible to be Jewish and to not be careful about that issue. So that's a part of the whole range positions here. So essentially, what do you see as a range? You see there are some who say that Kabbalah Samitzos is not Ma'akev. It's not a mainstream position among poskim, but it does exist, and there certainly are those who would be Choshesh L'chumra, more likely to say that Kabbalah Samitzos is Ma'akev, but Hodah Samitzos is not Ma'akev. A machlokes about somebody who plans on doing the mitzvos, who accepts the mitzvos and plans on not actually practicing because of te'avon considerations. And the question of how to read the impact of that Gemara, that somebody who is converting in a setting where either major parts of the Torah are news to him, he's unaware of, or are practiced differently, even if it's blatantly anti-halachic, but it's the way the community practices, that also affects the Kabbalah HaMitzvos. I'd recommend that if you want to have a nice review of some of these topics in English, the Rav Yosef Tzvi Rimon, who is a big bucky in many halachic topics, so there's an article in tradition.
Who is this?
Rav Yosef Tzvi Rimon, so who has written extensively on halachic matters in Hebrew. There's an article in English in tradition, which I don't know if he wrote this himself or was translated by somebody else, but it's a nice survey of many of the positions, practically speaking, about the issue of Kabbalah Samitzvos. And in the context of that article, he also talks about the issue we discussed yesterday, about the whole controversy from several years ago about whether a Bezdin that accepts Gerim that are not fully committed to Kabbalah Samitzvos, whether that impacts on the Dayanim, the issue we spoke about yesterday. So he surveys both of those topics in a very helpful way. In tradition, it was an issue from 2013, if you want to search for it. Just to add one other major issue. So what about hashgafic points. Rav Asher Weiss has the tshuva in Chelek Aleph for the Minchas Asher in Siman Nun Dalet, where he talks about the question. He says, let's say there's a major hashgafic mistake. He says, let's say somebody converted and he thought that the Torah was given to the Jews and Christianity was given to the Christians and Islam was given to the Muslims, and this is all valid, it's all from God, these are all equally true. So is that impact on his Geiris? So he writes there very emphatically that the Geiris is 100% valid, even though the individual had this mistake. And are you not hearing me? I just got this message. The speaker is not working. Are you hearing me? Okay. So, all right. So hopefully you can still hear me. Sorry for these interferences today. So he is emphatic there that the Geiris is good and one should not even do Geiris L'chumro. One shouldn't raise any questions. And there he goes through the whole role of Hashgafa in Geiris. And he says that being Mekabel, the Yud Gimel Ikrim, thinks is not a part of the Kabbalah HaMitzvos, and that it's possible to make a mistake in Hashgafa, even a very big mistake, and it's a mistake, but it's still a valid Geiris. And he notes here that the Gemara in Shabbos and Daf Lamed Aleph, which we've referred to a few times also, where Hillel converted people who would seem to be questionable. So one of the people who Hillel converted said, I don't believe in Torah Sheba'al Peh. So that is a huge gap. And Hillel accepted him anyway. So Tosfos says he accepted him because he knew that ultimately he would straighten out. Ultimately he would come to accept Torah Sheba'al Peh also. But it sounds like you could have a huge flaw in Hashgafa, a pretty massive gap in Hashgafa, and still be acceptable. Now, you recall from our past year that the Marsha there has a comment as an important detail to figure out there. Does, when Hillel was Makabal, these people, does it mean he was Megayer them right away? Or does it mean that he accepted them into his program and he converted them later, which would impact this issue? But if, like the Gemara sounds like, he was Megayer them right away, Tosfos is saying because he was confident that ultimately they'll straighten out. So it sounds like that a big mistake in Hashgafa is not going to impact the Geiris, is not going to impact things. Would it impact the Dayanim? It's a good question also. If they, on the part of the Dayanim, Shtarmbach has a tshuva about that. It's also a complex discussion. But a part of Rav Asher's tshuva about this, he also quotes the Chazon Ish, where he notes the Chazon Ish says that the whole idea of Geiris is to enter into the philosophy of Judaism and its theology. And if one were to say that I plan on following all of the rules of halachic Judaism because I think it's good for me, I think it'll be a noble life, but I don't believe in it, so then that's not a ger. So does that contradict what you're saying here? So Rush says, no, it doesn't contradict it. He's talking about something else. He's talking about somebody who knows that he doesn't buy into the theology of Judaism at all, and he just sees it as a good way to live, so he plans on following all the halachos without believing in it. So there, that is missing the essence of what Geiris is. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about somebody who does want to subscribe to the theology of Judaism, just he misunderstands exactly what the theology is. So then he says that's not going to disqualify the Geiris for all the reasons that we mentioned. And he does also include here a reference to Niskaria ben Ha'akum, where, as we mentioned, Rashi and Ayin Beis and Shabbos even includes a Vodazara in that category. You see that somebody who has a flawed perception theologically of what Judaism asks for, that doesn't mean that he's not going to be able to be a ger. I have to try to educate better, but they're still considered to be a valid ger. So once again, as with yesterday's topic and a few other topics, there are a lot of controversies here, there are a lot of nuances, a lot of subjectivities, and it affects very much the lives of real human beings. Have to be very, very careful and very sensitive about these issues, but these are some of the concerns and some of the considerations that are discussed. So just to quickly recap, we spoke about, so we mentioned Kabbalah's HaMitzvos. The one hand is not overtly listed as one of the requirements. On the other hand, maybe that's for opposite reasons, because it's so much what the whole process is, so it's not the requirement of Geirus, it is Geirus, it's the definition of Geirus. The Salvechik and the Hari Kedem explained how Kabbalah Satori at Har Sinai was the essence of Geirus, and that's what it is that we are trying to recreate, Dafka, as a whole package. And our Gemara in Yevamos has a number of references to being informed of the mitzvos and accepting them, but even more strongly, the Gemara in Bechorus says that if you refuse to accept even a part, even one thing, so that's no good. And there's a big discussion, I mean, no good b'di'evet, or there's no good as something that we'll accept, l'chatchila, but if he was converted, then it is good after the fact. That's a major question. The Rambam has a language that if he wasn't informed, and we know he has ulterior motives, still he is a ger, so what do we do with that? So Rishnarbach notes that he emphasizes hejotos there, and he says that's the whole distinction, that a bezdin should be aware that he's not going to perform the mitzvos, and taking him anyway, that impacts their status as a bezdin. But if they're hejotos, they don't understand this, so then they could still be a valid bezdin, and that's the distinction. So in general, the question of whether the Sachila B'dieved poskim took on this issue, like the Zvar Avam and the Achiezer and the Beis Yitzchak and others, and the mainstream position, most poskim assume that it is Ma'akev B'dieved. Now, we talked about the Sugya in Shabbos, so the references of Niskayra Vein Ha'akum, where it sounds like it's possible to convert even if you don't know about Shabbos. Rashi says you don't know about Avodah Zarah. Big, big details of Jewish practice might be missing. So what was going on there? So first of all, Tosfos points out there must have been a Bezdin, otherwise there wouldn't have been a Geirus at all. But the Bezdin forgot to tell him about Shabbos, and then he went right away to live in the same completely non-Jewish community that he had come from before, so he never found out about it. Or the Ramban says more, they didn't tell him about mitzvahs overall. So does that mean you don't need Kabbalahs and mitzvahs? So as the Chemda Shlomo distinguishes, and the Ritzvah already says in that sugya, that there's a difference between not accepting the mitzvahs and not being informed of the mitzvahs. Being informed of the mitzvahs is necessary to chachila, but the geirus could exist without it, but not accepting the mitzvahs, that's the absul b'di'evet. And that's also a pshat in the Rambam, because this Rambam we mentioned seems to contradict the other Rambams in a number of places, where he does say clearly that you need Kabbalahs and mitzvahs, and the Shulchan Aruch also, we found the same basic stira, and perhaps that's really the yishuv of the stira. And then we mentioned that Reb Chaim Ozer drew a distinction between not accepting even one mitzvah to somebody who accepts the mitzvahs but says that because of great desire he's going to violate them. So should that be different? And many Achronim question that distinction. What does it mean to be makabel mitzvahs without practicality? That's what a mitzvah is. Or means to be brought into the Jewish community, and if you're not practicing, how are you brought into the Jewish community? But one way or another, within Reb Chaim Ozer's position and outside Reb Chaim Ozer's position, you have to make distinctions, because clearly nobody's able to be perfect. None of us are. That's why we're still in Galus, because of our Lashon Hara, so, and our Sinas Klinam. So what do we mean by this? We have to mean that we'll have to draw distinctions and say that which culturally defines Judaism has to actually be practiced. But that which doesn't go to the actual cultural definition but is required, okay, so there we can be imperfect, and that's a subtle distinction. And we mentioned Moshe has a number of tshuvas. You have to take them all together to get the whole picture, but he basically affirms that Kabbalah and Mitzvot is ma'akev. But to what extent a person could misunderstand what the mitzvah involves and still be a sincere ger is going to be somewhat subjective and somewhat of an assessment. And in one example he mentioned, a woman who converts in order to marry her husband who's a Machal Shabbos, so because of her interactions with him and his circle, so she thinks that Kabbal Shabbos is a chumrah, it's not a real mitzvah, it's something that you have to, you don't really have to do, that it's just what some very pious people do. And that's not going to necessarily disqualify things. And again, it's a subtle distinction, and very much a b'di'evit kind of distinction. And then we talked about the question of a problem in Hashkaf. If somebody has a mistaken philosophical belief, Rav Asher Weiss discusses that, does that disqualify his geirus? So he's very emphatic that it does not, for a number of reasons, in addition to reference to the scattered Ben HaAkum. So he also mentions that we don't find there's an obligation to inform the Yigimel Ikrim as a part of the Gerus process, and that we see from other indications that it's possible to have major philosophical holes and still be accepted as a Ger, at least the Evet. The Gemara's reference to the person who didn't believe in Tarash Balpeh came before Hillel, and Rashi's reference to an Ovid of Vadazara, etc. And then, just to close off, so he drew that distinction within the Chazon Ish, that when the Chazon Ish said that if somebody plans on following all the mitzvos, but he doesn't believe in the theology, he's just doing it because it sounds like a good way to live, that defies the essence of the Geirus. He says, Rashi says, that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about somebody who does want to subscribe to the theology, but just he misunderstands what it is. So then he's quite confident that that is a valid Geirus. Okay, so we will stop here. Tomorrow, again, we should be comfortably scheduled for Chatzot, so we'll try to cover another topic tomorrow. Thank you to Philip for sending around that article, so hopefully it's definitely worth reading. Moshe, you have a question? Moshe Blank?
It obviously could be very different in terms of like the specific scenario, but in terms of the faulty practice later on, are the Kruchins is a completely different story, or like that can't be based off of, or like
it is a different story. What we can do with it is part of the whole debate about how to relate to it. Machlokes in the Gemara, some machlokes in Poskim, what to learn from it. So yes, it is a completely different story. What that story means for us is a part of the question.
Just because, like in Chulin this year, I remember seeing like a lot of Makoros that said like even like recent. Later, like the fact that they were Chilko Masay and was like Miguel Emil, so that they were never Gerim at all.
Right, exactly. So we're going to hopefully next week get into the question of retroactive indications and how exactly that plays a role or doesn't play a role, and that's going to be a part of that discussion. Got it, Will. Okay, I should call off to everyone. Everyone should be well, and I will see you guys tomorrow.
Thank you.
Okay, Chicago.